It's the Hoffman Show, hour number two of 2.5 today. Yes, 2.5 is it's college basketball season as of right now. College basketball is actually happening. Men's and women's games all across the U.S. right now. And Maryland's playing tonight, and we got coverage for you here on the Team 980. I'm actually live at Capital One Arena, where the Warriors will be in town to take on the Wizards tonight. That game is at 7 on Bloomberg 99.1. Right now, it is time to talk more Commanders, though, and it's time to do it with our pal Michael Phillips during today's Not My Beat.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
Miguel, ¿cómo estás, señor?
I am literally staring at the Siegel Center, where in 2 hours, VCU will start its season against Bellarmine on 910 The Fan. That's available free on the Odyssey app, Craig, if you're keeping score.
I'm always keeping score, Michael. I am always keeping score. And, you know, the score of the Odyssey app is that it's always free, and there's always sports there. So, you know, if you're not already listening to us right now on it, now would be a good time to go hit the download button. Bosses, that's got to be at least $5 of a bonus for both me and Michael. At least $5. That's all I'm asking. $5.
But, buddy, there's 7-2. We got easier bonus money. We don't even have to do that.
That's a good point. That is a good point. But we did it anyway, so give us $5. Okay, Michael, the way I described the Commanders' win yesterday off the top of the show was it was businesslike. They were never really stressed. They answered every moderately difficult question asked of them. How would you describe their performance yesterday against New York?
That's nice. I went with a hard hat victory. You know, this wasn't the best performance they've had all season. This wasn't one that's going to get them on, you know, all the highlight reels or national attention or, you know, the awards and all those things. This was just, they played a team that wasn't as good as they were, and they beat that team. And they were told how the game was going to go by the Giants when they ran the ball over and over and over out of the gate. And they responded to that with their own time of possession drives and doing enough to make sure that they could be in a winning position. And it's just, I went big picture so much on my show today, not because the game was boring. I mean, it was a little bit boring, but just because how refreshing is it to have a coaching staff that you just fully trust to handle that situation, not freak out in that situation, take care of business in that situation?
Yeah, that was one of the points I made as well during our first and 10 segment was that between the just general professionalism and then, man, you want to talk about not just like, hey, they do it right, but you want the contrast. Oh, my God. What is Brian Daboll doing? And what is the defensive coordinator doing? Not having his guys ready for the end of half. And then obviously Daboll, the timeouts, not using them ahead of the 2-minute warning, letting Cliff Kingsbury just, hey, free pass play, buddy. You want to use it? Sure do. To see not only Washington handle their business, but to see, to be reminded, if you will, Michael, because we've seen plenty of it over the years, how bad it can be when that stuff isn't detailed up. Like, I think that's a great point.
It's not a given that coaches are going to know how to handle the clock. And boy, Brian Daboll didn't down the stretch there. And that was one of the key differences in this game. And that produced, you know, a turning point moment in the game, and all of a sudden, you know, things are very different than it had been if they had just handled their business correctly. Yeah, it's wild to me because the Giants, I mean, you know, Daboll comes in that first year, they look good. You say, okay, maybe the coach is holding them back. Now year three, okay, maybe the coach is holding them back. You know, Daniel Jones is certainly holding them back, but I don't think he's the only one. I also don't understand, Craig, why the Giants fans keep defending Daniel Jones. I'm not saying he's the problem. I'm just saying he's definitely not the solution.
Yeah, I don't get this. I don't know. Maybe we're talking to different Giants fans. Every Giants fan I know knows Daniel Jones is not very good and knows that they made a huge mistake in giving him $40 million a year. Although they kind of, I don't know, they were in between a rock and a hard place. But the problem is, like, that's the worst place you can be. You either need to run into the rock or the hard place. Rock or hard place, safer than in the middle of the two in the NFL, because now they're stuck in purgatory. Now who would want to go there? It's a mess. Although I think the big question in New York is, like, you know, you need a reset now. I think everybody knows, like, the next iteration is coming. And I even saw a couple articles today saying that Daniel Jones is probably the next Russell Wilson and other quarterbacks who have been benched so that they don't hit injury guarantees. Like, we can't afford to get this guy hurt and have to pay him again next year. We want to be able to cut him, so he's just going to get benched. But the question is, I think, there, like, do you let Dable and Joe Shane pick the next guy or set the path forward. And I think that's the problem if you're Dable right now, is you're not actually as good as you are schematically offensively, you have not shown the discipline, the clock management, any of the head coach stuff to say that you'd belong to be anything other than an offensive coordinator in this league.
In a division that has gotten good, too. The Eagles aren't going anywhere. Say what you will about the Cowboys. There's talent on that roster, and obviously these guys speak for itself. I just love the new Giants motto, Craig. I think this is really good. Hey, did you see what the Jets did today?
I mean, you could make an argument for most of the last 50 years that has been the Giants' motto, outside of like Joe Namath and one or two other stretches where like Curtis Martin was awesome. Michael Phillips with us, mostly talking Commanders, which sometimes includes making fun of the Giants, here on the Hoffman Show. All right, Michael, I'm going to give you the same pop quiz that I gave Anthony earlier. Are you ready for this?
Oh, boy, bring it on.
All right, Anthony, are you ready to see if Michael can get closer than you did on my pop quiz earlier during First and 10?
I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, Michael, on what percent of their snaps did the New York Giants blitz yesterday?
It had to have been more than half. You would never have known that by the results. I do think it was more than half, though. They brought pressure a ton. Give me 55%.
Wow, Michael, you are clearly a more astute football observer than Anthony for sure. And frankly, for me, I would have not have guessed more than half based off of just the sheer lack of pressure. But Michael, you are very close to correct. In fact, it was 60% of their snaps yesterday.
Ooh. Yeah. Ball to the offensive line for sure. That was the first one I gave out. With Cornelius Lucas out, the kid, Colvin, comes in and he's so good. I think it starts in the center with Biadasz. Biadasz has just been such a difference maker for these guys, putting them in the right position. And don't overlook the contribution the tight ends and the running backs have made as well, getting the chip blocks, buying that extra second when they need to. I take back everything I said about the offensive line all offseason. They're good. They're legitimately good.
How much of it do you think is like these are players that have played better this season versus the ability to separate out the play calling, the situation, and the fact that the quarterback does cover for a large amount of a large percentage of the small number of mistakes they are making?
I would love to know the answer to that, right? And that's one of the reasons we love football, is it's so hard to separate out what's the quarterback, what's the team, right? Quarterback win is, of course, the most useless stat in all of football for that reason. Offensive line wins would probably be about the same. I'd love for you to get somebody smart on your show instead of me and really untangle what is going on here. Sorry. I've identified Biadasz calls the protections really well, right? You pick up on that. I've identified that Jaden Daniels buys time when he needs to and processes at a really high level. And I do think very highly of this coaching staff, obviously, not just at the top level, but you go down to the position coaches. I think they're, Anthony Lynn obviously is very good at drawing up, these things as well. I don't know what's what. Whatever it is, though, is working exceptionally well.
Like, on some level, Michael, I actually think that they approach this, some of their problems, on like the simplicity level that fans do. And I mean that as a compliment, because I feel like some coaches, and we both cover them in our years of doing this, right? You were on the beat longer than I was, but I was on it long enough. It's like, oh, I got this thing, it should work. And it's like, I don't know, this guy over here seems to be the problem. What could you do? I don't know. We got to slide. We got to do this. We could do that. And it's like Cliff goes, I think we're going to chip that guy. Like, that edge is a problem. So let's put two guys on him. Hey, this corner, that guy's in the way of the play. That guy's killing our outside runs. So what if we put the receiver in motion and we figured out it was man-to-man and he just follows him and now he's not there anymore? Okay, cool. That seems like a solution. And, like, the simplicity of their solutions for this stuff, both from a pressure and a run game design. I circled one of the key plays yesterday, that RPO they ran to Jeremy McNichols with about 7.5 minutes to go, where they just run Diami in motion across the formation. And that little bit of threat of screen finally loosened up that Giants run defense, which had gotten pretty stout. They get an 8-yard gain, and all of a sudden they're off and running towards the field goal that puts them ahead for good. And so it's like these little details that it's just like, if you asked someone at the high school level to be like, hey, can you figure out a solution to this problem? Yeah, this. And you might not have to think, you know, sometimes you do have to think about second order problems. And I'm not saying football is always this simple, but sometimes it is. And coaches way overthink stuff. And I think that's the thing I appreciate about Cliff, is specifically in the staff that he's assembled, is they clearly see problems, which helps them clearly find solutions.
I agree with all that. And I think within that is, you know, he's not obsessed with keeping 11 guys viable on every play, right? You see so many guys, you know, all five skill players have to be the impact players or taking a guy out. He's not afraid to say, here's John Bates. John Bates' job is to buy the quarterback an extra half second. And I'm sure somebody in some meeting says, hang on, you just changed the math. Now it's 11 against 10, and we're at a disadvantage. And he just kind of shrugs his shoulders and says, they'll find Terry. They'll find Noah.
It doesn't matter if our quarterback is dead. Yeah. Like, order of operations here.
That's exactly it, right? None of this works if the quarterback doesn't make the play in the end, and the guys don't make the play in the end. But just that willingness to say, yeah, you know, we'll take a guy out of this play to buy our quarterback the extra half second. We think that's worth it on the back end, and it has been.
And by the way, the longest play I believe that they had yesterday, I'm just looking real quick. No, the Zacchaeus 42-yarder was longer. But the third longest play, Noah had a 31-yarder. When was Noah Brown's 31-yarder? I don't even remember that. Eckler's 28-yarder, which was on a 3rd and 9 in that same drive that I was just referencing. It happens on a play where Eckler chips. And then the Giants don't pick him up. They're in man-to-man, and it's like, oh, we thought he was a blocker. Nope, he releases late. And so even in those situations, they're getting big plays out of it, which you love to see. Michael Phillips, host of MP on the Mic, 10 a.m. to noon, 9:10 The Fan in Richmond, available every day on the free Odyssey app anywhere in the United States. He's with us here on the Hoffman Show for Not My Beat. Okay, the defense, Michael. In the first quarter yesterday, they gave up 115 yards rushing. That's bad. They didn't give up a whole lot the rest of the game. The Giants finished with 164. Do you look at that as a positive or a negative?
Probably negative overall, because they did transition into passing there. I don't know, you know, if that was a deliberate thing or not, but I felt like they didn't press their advantage in the second half as much as I would have perhaps after that. I do think the positive here is these guys are really good at in-game adjustments. And your fun stat of the day here, Craig, I'm not going to make you take a quiz on it. These guys have won the coin toss in 7 of their 9 games this season. That's luck. That's not skill, by the way. That's not the DQ effect. But they've deferred every time. And the result of that is they get a better possession to start the second half than they would have get to start the first half. Because these guys can process information in real time really, really well. And I think that's the positive I would take out of what is otherwise a negative staff.
That's a really interesting point about, like, you defer because you have the chance to double up, which they did in this game. They didn't use it. They went 3 and out on the opening drive. But the idea of we're going to have a better idea coming out of halftime, I think that's a really astute point. I don't know. This has been kind of a talking point on the show today, is I don't really mind the rushing total. Like, obviously, I want them to not give up 10 yards and then 12 and then Jones on his own read for 24. Like, I'm not saying, hey, great job, guys. Nailed it. But I do think it's a strategic choice to just say, hey, New York, if you want to go on 16 play drives, be our guest. We don't think you can do it. Not more than once a game. And I think that overall, against most offenses in the NFL this year, that is a good bet to make. And so that is kind of the thing that I wonder about, is like, how viable is that against the best of the best? Is that actually a winning strategy, or is it a get to the playoffs because offenses for some reason are down in the NFL this year strategy?
Hey, we'll find out over the next few weeks, right? We're turning the page quickly into some top-notch competition. I thought the Bears were going to be top-notch competition. So, you know, I got more excited for that game than I had the right to, it turned out, because they're kind of a mess coming out of the bye. I don't know how that happens. You have a really good team, gets hot, goes into the bye, comes out of it worse than it was before. I mean, that's obviously a coaching thing, too, to a large extent. But you look at these next three, Steelers, Eagles, Cowboys. I'm ready to learn a lot about how this team will hang in the playoffs. And what a sentence to say, right? They're 7-2. They're going to make the playoffs, Craig. That's that's basically a foregone conclusion at this point. How are they going to hang against those top-tier teams? Well, you got two of them coming up, and the Cowboys always give you a tough test. I'm excited to do some learning here.
No, I think that's a good point as well. The Eagles all of a sudden playing a lot better, obviously. I also wonder, though, you talk about Chicago. We've heard about the 49ers flu a couple years ago. There's a Lions flu this year. I gotta look this up. Is there a Commanders flu that is happening? Like, think about how poorly Arizona played for a couple of weeks after they played Washington. The Bengals, I don't know, they figured some things out offensively. Cleveland was bad already. The Ravens then went and lost to the Browns. Maybe that was 2 weeks later. I don't know. I got to do the math. But I do think that there is something to the Commanders have, like, just broken a couple of teams. Like, Arizona's a fine football team. They stomped Arizona and, like, broke their soul. And I think that goes to the kind of team this is. And, yeah, they're under-talented, and I'll ask you more about the trade deadline in a second. But the reason they're 7-2 is because they get every ounce out of what they have, and they put it into other people in a physical way that is just, like, it has the lasting effects. At least that's what it feels like.
I agree with that. And, you know, I'm not going to tell you the Panthers are a good football team. They're a bad football team. But I haven't noticed a lot of teams beating them by 40, Craig. That's kind of unique to these guys, right? Even when they take care of business, they do it emphatically. They do it in a way that puts people on notice and die. That's part of the reason I'm excited for this Steelers game, because obviously the Steelers defense has done the exact same to people this year. I think this is the best defense in football. I think it's a Super Bowl caliber defense. On the other hand, I think these guys are playing a physical, tough style of football right now. It's a hard out for anybody, no matter how good you are. I think that makes this a fun matchup.
For sure. And, of course, by this time tomorrow, we will be past the trade deadline. However you want to answer this question, whether it's draft pick, whether it's caliber of player, whether it's whatever, how aggressive would you be? How aggressive do you anticipate Adam Peters being in the next 22 hours and change?
I think he's going to lay low. I really do. I think that as fun as this year is, and it's so much fun to say things like best record since 1996, pre-Snyder. That's incredible. Like, it's a fun year. It's not a championship year. I keep coming back to this. This is a really good team, by the way. They can hang with pretty much anybody. This is not, you watch the Lions play, you watch that Ravens game, you watch the Chiefs play. There's another gear, another level that these guys aren't quite at yet. And that's not to say they can't get there. I think they can get there really quickly. That's to say, I'm hanging on, and I'm saving all my resources, all my money, all my draft picks to really go after this thing in the next 2 years when you've got a healthy Jaden Daniels. Guys want to be here. You're going to run the free agent market this offseason. I would not jeopardize that to bring in short-term help unless it's a very favorable deal.
See, that's the thing, though, is I kind of look at this as the start of free agency. And this is kind of a new trend in the NFL that I think is smart, or at least one that's coming up a little bit more. And the Bears were in a very unique situation to take advantage of this last year because they didn't care as much about their draft pick last year because they had Carolina's pick, which turned out to be the number one pick and their franchise quarterback in Caleb Williams. But the Patriots, there's talk that they might be buyers this year because it's going to be easier to acquire a player now and re-sign them than have to fight with the team in free agency in getting a bidding war, or, you know, you got a guy that's been franchise tagged and you got to give up a ton of draft capital. I kind of look at this as an opportunity to build for the future, but also build for right now. Like, you get an extra half season out of a guy, plus you get him for the future. I'm not really interested in rentals, but I am interested in young players that I may sign otherwise next year in free agency and just have to give up an extra sixth rounder to acquire right now.
I think that's a really smart point. If you can do a deal like that that comes with a long-term, a Montez Sweat-style deal, I kind of like that. I also say Adam Peters loves his draft picks, and these guys have the salary cap space to do a, you know, one of those trade and dump deals where they eat somebody's salary. I'd be generally hear about bad teams doing that. This is the rare good team that's positioned to do that if they wanted to.
That's a good point. The thing is, I just don't know who those players are. And the fact that dudes are dropping like flies around the league. I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers, who were coming in here on Sunday, could have any of like three or four wide receivers that have been rumored to be linked to them. They almost got Ayuk. It falls apart. He resigns at San Francisco. Now he's hurt, but you know, obviously they were in on Devontae. Now they apparently had a deal done for Christian Kirk, basically, and then he gets hurt, breaks his collarbone, out for the season, and now there is still in the wide receiver market. So with Denzel Ward going down and all these dudes around the league just dropping like flies, the available list just keeps shrinking and shrinking, which obviously makes the market more and more competitive. So could be a wild wild couple of hours here. Mike will be on the air live for a couple of them tomorrow, 10 a.m. to noon on 910 The Fan. Of course, down in Richmond, if you happen to be driving through the area, you can also catch it on 105.1 FM, and you can catch it anywhere on the free Odyssey app. Michael, appreciate you as always, sir, and talk to you next week.
Yes, sir. Talk to you then.
All right, it's Michael Phillips, everybody, with us here on the Hoffman Show. We get back a speedy edition of Around the NFL before Dave Johnson joins us live on set here at Capital One Arena ahead of the Wizards and Warriors tonight.